NATCA says the FAA went on a year-end spending spree. The shuttle Discovery docks with the ISS. And the Air Force allows new CSAR bids. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Friday, October 26, 2007. 2 months after a high-profile congressional hearing exposed widespread health and safety problems at Federal Aviation Administration air traffic control facilities across the country, and in the midst of crippling communications outages, the FAA went on an end-of-fiscal-year spending spree to outfit scores of facilities with new and expensive furniture, TVs, and even original artwork. The National Air Traffic Controllers Association is making a stink about those expenditures, in part because embarrassing the FAA is one of the few tactics available to a union which can't legally strike. But the priorities reflected in the new toys are undeniably interesting, given the fact that the FAA has plastic tarps protecting electronic equipment from a leaking roof at Fort Worth Center, where it just hung a new $1,300 oil painting as part of redecorating the lobby. NATCA highlighted over $5,000 worth of new furniture at the tower at Asheville Regional Airport, a 58-inch $2,500 plasma TV at Charlotte Douglas Tower, an LED motivational message board at Fayetteville Regional, and new leather furniture in the conference rooms at Atlanta Center, among its list of budgetary indiscretions. NATCA President Patrick Forey said, quote, "This is the kind of reckless fiscal behavior that demands both federal and congressional investigations, but sadly, has become an annual ritual of a bloated government bureaucracy supposedly looking out for the safety of the flying public, instead feeding its gluttony at the taxpayer trough," unquote. Patrick also had some negative things to say. The Space Shuttle Discovery and its crew arrived at the International Space Station at 8:40 a.m. Eastern Time Thursday morning, delivering a new module and bringing fresh crew members. NASA says the two crews went to work immediately, preparing for almost 9 days of joint operations. The first of 5 spacewalks planned for the mission will begin early Friday morning. The STS-120 crew members are scheduled to get their wake-up call at 1:38 a.m. Eastern Time Friday morning. That sounds really early, but with the sun rising and setting every 90 minutes, who's counting? The Air Force has yielded to a year of pressure to allow new bids from 3 companies competing to build a new combat search and rescue helicopter. After Boeing was originally awarded the contract worth $15 billion, competitors Lockheed Martin and Sikorsky protested that the decision didn't follow the rules laid out in the request for proposal. The Air Force wanted to move forward. The Government Accountability Office said the contract should be rebid. The Air Force resisted. Finally, after a second round of protests, another intervention from the GAO, and threatened involvement from Senator John McCain's office, new proposals will be accepted from all 3 companies. The new round means that any of the 3 contractors could ultimately win out, but no new players will be allowed. It's not clear what this does to the Air Force's timetable for getting the new machines into service. NASA Administrator Michael Griffin has told the Associated Press he regrets the agency's decision not to release results of a 4-year pilot survey, which showed near collisions among aircraft in the air and on the ground, happen up to twice as often as reported by the government. The survey included contact with 24,000 pilots over a 4-year period. In early 2005, that project was terminated. Earlier this month, the contractor which conducted the survey, Battelle Memorial Institute, was told to send survey-related materials back to NASA and purge its own computers. NASA Associate Administrator Thomas Luedtke said the agency didn't want the public's confidence in airlines shaken in releasing the report because it could affect airline profits. Several federal lawmakers directed the Battelle Memorial Institute to preserve its original documents and files. But the Institute said the purge request was allowed by its contract with NASA, suggesting it's probably too late to get those originals saved. Griffin told the AP, quote, "I regret the impression that NASA was in any way trying to put commercial interests ahead of public safety. That was not and will never be the case," unquote. But that statement seems diametrically opposed to Luedtke's position in his final letter to the Associated Press, after 14 months of refusing Freedom of Information requests. Quote, "Release of the requested data, which are sensitive and safety-related, could materially affect the public confidence in and the commercial welfare of the air carriers and general aviation companies whose pilots participated in the survey," unquote. Up next on ANN, China reports a successful launch of its moon probe. China denies it's selling jet fighters to Iran. And the NTSB adds to its long list of warnings about UAV operations. You're listening to Aero News.
uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for October 26, 2007. On the web, you can find us at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. China is headed for the moon. The country's first ever moon probe was launched early Thursday morning by the Chinese National Space Administration. The Chang'e-1 blasted off from the Xishang Satellite Launch Center in Sichuan atop a Long March 3A rocket. The European Space Agency, which is assisting China in this venture, tells ANN that Chang'e-1 has four mission goals. The probe is to get 3D images, including the first detailed images of some regions near the lunar poles. It will also analyze the abundance of up to 14 chemical elements and their distribution across the lunar surface, measure the depth of the lunar soil, and explore the space weather between the Earth and the Moon. The spacecraft is a big one, weighing in at over 5,180 pounds. It'll operate from a low circular lunar orbit about 124 miles above the surface of the Moon, and the probe is designed to operate for 1 year. China eventually plans to land unmanned spacecraft on the surface of the Moon, including a rover, and to bring lunar rocks back to Earth for analysis. While obviously enjoying the prestige of its aerospace accomplishments, China's government nevertheless denies reports that it plans to sell its domestically designed and produced J-10 fighter to Iran. Those reports had recently surfaced in Russian and Israeli media. The Russian reports were very specific, claiming China had signed a deal to provide Iran with more than 20 of the fighter jets starting next year in a deal valued at about $1 billion U.S. On Thursday, AP reported Foreign Ministry spokesman Liu Zhangqiao told reporters, quote, "It's not true. It is an irresponsible report. China has not had talks with Iran on J-10 jets," unquote. As Iran's relationships with the West have worsened, its ties with China have remained strong. China's booming economy needs vast amounts of Iranian oil, and Iran has a long military and technological wish list. In April of last year, the crash of an unmanned aerial vehicle operated for Customs and Border Protection by a contractor provided the National Transportation Safety Board with the opportunity to issue its first probable cause report and first recommendations dealing with UAVs operated in civilian airspace. That crash happened when a remote control console locked up. The operator didn't follow the checklist. The Predator B's fuel valve defaulted to off, and the 5-ton aircraft came down in a sparsely populated but nonetheless residential area near Nogales, Arizona. The Predator was heavily damaged, but fortunately there were no injuries on the ground. Obviously, with a few minor differences in circumstances, this could have been a catastrophe. Aviation advocacy groups have expressed concern about the growing use of UAVs by government agencies and law enforcement and worried that it would impact the safety of manned aircraft. NTSB seized its first opportunity to issue 22 recommendations for the operation of UAVs in civilian airspace in a report last week. This week, the board has 16 more recommendations, this time aimed specifically at Customs and Border Protection policies and procedures. The NTSB wants the Predator and its control systems improved with more backup, more autonomy to keep the craft from falling out of the sky when the control links are lost, stricter oversight of pilots, and recording of all communications during UAV operations to guide investigators and safety policy agencies in the future. You can read the complete list of recommendations in the print version of our story at aero-news.net. The National Air Traffic Controllers Association complained this week that the FAA, which used to require either military controller experience or a degree from an approved college program for all candidates for air traffic control jobs, was now recruiting on MySpace and Craigslist to meet its hiring quotas. Now, the FAA has announced it's expanding the list of accredited colleges by 9, for a total of 23. Schools accredited under the FAA's Air Traffic Collegiate Training Initiative, or CTI program, offer a non-engineering aviation degree in aviation programs. Hank Krakowski, chief operating officer of the FAA's air traffic organization, said, quote, "We have a plan in place to make sure the nation's airspace system is managed by an appropriate number of highly motivated, properly trained controllers. The CTI program is a big part of that plan, unquote. Of the 1,815 new controller candidates the FAA says it hired in fiscal 2007, about 800 were graduates of CTI schools. Graduation doesn't guarantee acceptance to the FAA Academy in Oklahoma City, but those accepted are allowed to skip the initial 5-week basic training in air traffic control. The schools new to the program were chosen based on organizational foundation and resources, organization credibility, and curriculum and facilities. You can see the complete list at aero-news.net. Still ahead, two unusual aircraft join the fight against the California superfires. Hawker Beechcraft opens a sheet metal plant in Chihuahua. And two airlines offer passengers in-flight World Series games. You're listening to Aero News.
Welcome to Cirrus Design. Maker of the world's best-selling personal aircraft, the sleek SR-22. Cirrus planes feature the latest technologies and are equipped with an exclusive, life-saving parachute system. It is our mission to make personal aviation safe, affordable, and convenient. At Cirrus, we offer a test drive like no one else in the business.
Shoot happens. Come on, you know it does. Even the world's top test pilots know there are in-flight situations you can't always recover from. Mid-air collision, control failure, pilot incapacitation. In severe emergencies, do what the world's top test pilots do. Use a parachute. Except, instead of having to bail out of a moving aircraft, you can have the safety of a BRS full airframe recovery parachute. BRS has parachutes for an enormous variety of aircraft, from experimental to light sport, and all the way to retrofits on certified airplanes. Shoot happens. Will you be ready when it does? Call BRS today at 651-457-8651 or visit us online at brsparachutes.com.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Friday, October 26, 2007. I'm Paul Flack. In fighting the largest series of wildfires in his state's history, California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger vowed to use every possible resource to fight the blazes now raging in Southern California. And two relatively rare aircraft have answered that call. British Columbia-based Coulson Flying Tankers has sent one of its vintage Martin Mars water bombers to fight the blazes. The four-engine Navy seaplane, originally a World War II troop ferry, can dump over 7,000 gallons of water and retardant at a time and refill by skimming lakes or the ocean. Joining it in the fight against the California superfires is an experimental tanker based on the DC-10. Cargo Conversions LLC fitted the plane with three belly tanks, which can carry 12,000 gallons or 50 tons of water and can be refilled in just 8 minutes after landing at an airport. Called Tanker 910, the converted DC-10 is fresh from repairs made following a brush with treetops in June. As ANN reported at the time, the tanker sustained minor damage to the leading edge of its left wing and to control surfaces, including the aileron. The flight crew was unaware the incident had occurred and returned to base safely. In addition to these two unique aircraft, another 25 air tankers and 40 helicopters are assisting firefighters on the ground in battling the intense fires fanned by the fierce Santa Ana winds. Hawker Beechcraft announced on Thursday it's expanding its presence in Mexico with the official opening of a new aerospace plant in Chihuahua. The company says the light sheet metal assembly facility will enhance its competitive position in the world market and support current and future needs of its plant in Wichita, Kansas. The company said 250 employees are working at the new plant now, and plans are to hire 650 more in the next 5 years. CEO Jim Schuster said the increased manufacturing footprint will help the company meet current demand and aggressive growth targets. Quote, "This facility opening joins other examples of recent expansion and renovations in Little Rock, Arkansas, the United Kingdom, and Wichita, Kansas, the opening of a new service center in India, and our increased international sales presence," unquote. Hawker Beechcraft points out that Mexico now hosts manufacturing plants for Cessna, Bombardier, Gulfstream, Honeywell, Goodrich, and other companies. HBC already has a joint venture in Mexico with a dealer, Lobanol, to build wiring harnesses. Well, the Fall Classic is underway, and at least two airlines are offering flyers the chance to watch World Series games in flight. Denver-based Frontier Airlines is offering its home team's series games in flight as delivered by DirecTV. Obtaining permission to show the games took some fancy legal footwork. The airline's contract with a satellite TV provider doesn't normally cover the Fox network. Passengers will pay $5 and can see the games on 60 Airbus planes. JetBlue Airways calls Queens, New York home, but since the Mets aren't in the series and the Red Sox beat the Yankees this year, think of the Red Sox as an adopted home team for the airline. JetBlue will give passengers the games at no charge. Awesome! Here's yet another way to strike up that in-flight conversation with strangers we so crave when we fly. And finally, after 3.5 decades, the mystery of D.B. Cooper may be solved. In 1971, a man calling himself D.B. Cooper hijacked a Northwest Airlines flight from Portland to Seattle, demanded it land to take on a parachute and $200,000, then bailed out with the money over a remote area of Washington State. Hollywood movies, novelty songs, and mythology about Cooper became a cottage industry after the FBI couldn't solve the case. The only trace that was ever found after Cooper bailed was a bag buried near a stream found by a boy in 1980. It contained $5,800 in 20s. They were confirmed to be part of the cash given Cooper on the plane. This led to theories that he died in the woods. Now, the Morris, Minnesota Sun-Tribune reports a local resident is making a compelling case in support of his claim that his brother was D.B. Cooper. Lyle Christensen says his brother Kenneth, who died in 1994, looked just like the FBI sketch, was a former Army paratrooper with the specialized knowledge required to pull off the stunt, and was a disgruntled former Northwest employee who would have hijacked the plane just to shame the company. Lyle says further that Kenneth always had money, but never had a bank account, and he paid cash for his new home about a year after the crime happened. The Sun Tribune reports that those involved in the investigation agree Kenneth Christensen has always been a strong suspect. So, perhaps the question has finally been answered. But I have one more. If Ken Christensen was smart enough to pull the job off, leave just enough evidence in the woods to make people think he died, escape the wrath of the IRS, and keep the secret to his grave, why did he only ask for $200,000? And that's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, my guest is Ed Akabuchi, president and CEO of DayJet. The company launched its per-seat on-demand service 3 weeks ago, and we'll see just how closely the reality has been matching the computer projections. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts from iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, or right at our website, aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend, and have a clear and unlimited day.